to Inside Scoop 5. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really, really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Kathy Travis. She is a former Capitol Hill staffer and author of a new book, Target City. Her heartbreakingly candid journal begins the week after September 11th, 2001. And this book carries just the readers through that heart-pounding day, the anthrax attack on Capitol Hill, and a full-body shudder associated with working at the seat of the government in the ensuing years. Target sitting is a stark look at life on the target that Al-Qaeda missed in 2001. But before we talk to Kathy, I'd like you to know a little more about her. Kathy Travis began writing as a little girl. After college, she went to Washington, D.C. to work on Capitol Hill for 25 years as a communications director, senior advisor, and political consultant for various members of Congress until her early retirement in 2007. A native of Jonesboro, Arkansas, Travis graduated from Arkansas State University and resides on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Her first book, the award-winning Constitution Translated for Kids, was hailed by partisans in all major political parties as a non-ideological rendering of the entire Constitution, the foundation of our nation. Since Kathy left Congress, she has written two novels and several works of nonfiction. Today's topic is the Target Sitting, which is a digital book, and it's that inside story of life on Capitol Hill during 9/11. So listen in, because we're really going to talk about the days and the trauma that followed. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Well, this is going to be very interesting, and I know that our listening audience is just going to be glued to what we're going to be talking about. So first of all, okay, I'm going to set this up for our listeners. Here it is. Minutes before the plane hits the Pentagon on the morning of September 11, 2001, you and your congressman walk to the Capitol for a press conference. And get this, listeners, the title of the press conference is America Prepared for Future Military Threats? Wow. As I'm saying this, I've got goosebumps, Kathy.
There were so many ironies that day, Irene. That was one of the big ones.
No kidding. So let's just take a step back from that particular moment that you were walking out for the press conference. And how did that day, the morning of that day, really look like to you? And, you know, what were you doing? Obviously, it was normal for whatever normal is.
Yeah. Let me kind of do a little TikTok from that morning. And you're right, there's nothing's normal in a D.C. workday, not on Capitol Hill. There's nothing normal about it. I guess the only normal thing is getting there at a certain general time and leaving at a certain general time. But I had finished my morning. I did a couple hours of work in the morning every day by laptop, and then got dressed and went to work. And I had just finished up those couple of hours and was headed to my workplace at 8:45 when the first plane struck the Twin Towers. So I didn't know about that till I got to my office a couple of minutes afterwards. And we were watching it develop, and everybody thought it was an accident. We did too. And then we watched the second one live, like most of the country, most of the world, and instantly knew, you know, dirty words came out of our mouths, and this is an attack, you know. And mm-hmm. we had a general idea who it might be, and didn't have, but knew also that when people made that generalization about Oklahoma City in 1995, that they were wrong. So everybody was trying to hold back on saying, oh, I know who it is, because you don't know right away.
Right.
You just know something's going on. And we had a press conference, like you said, at 9:30. And I've always thought of, you know, the Capitol as being a sort of a place that would be attractive for people who wished us harm to do bad things to. And that morning, knowing we had to walk over to the Capitol, that was kind of difficult. After seeing that there was an attack and knowing that we were going to a place that was highly visible for the country. And I don't know what my face looked like, but I said to my congressman, you know, I talked to Kurt Skye, the press conference is still on, and he looked at me and he said, we weren't even sure what the other was talking about. He was like, what are you talking about? The press conference, what are you talking about? I'm not talking about anything, but mm-hmm. you don't have to go with me, he said. And I said, no, boss man, this is where we work. This is where we work. We're going to the press conference. So we went over there, and it was getting late getting started because people were, you know, trying to figure out what to say about, because obviously the answer to the press conference question was no before we even started the press conference. And the members were kind of chatting about that as they gathered their thoughts up on the dais. And then it was just so spine-tingling, you know, how you just know something's going on and something is just bugging the hell out of you. And it was that kind of feeling for all of us. And at one point, I just said, can we get started? Now, which was inappropriate, which I had never done before, which, you know,
yeah.
Many people later said, thank you.
Yeah.
And then we didn't go for a couple of minutes. I mean, the chairman started off and started running through his statement. And we saw on the TVs behind the members that there was smoke coming out of the Pentagon. And that was the picture. And the crawl underneath it was White House being evacuated. And we're like, oh, dirty words came out of our mouth again. But it was really just, it was almost like nanoseconds because we didn't say anything. We didn't, we didn't, you know, scream or whatever. I stood up and my congressman saw me stand up and I pointed. And the girl beside me was writing a note, WH evac. And we were moving all at the same time. And so the members jumped and started, you know, and said, let's go. to stop the press conference. Excuse me. And then we just ran down the stairs just to get out quickly. And we got to the bottom floor, and there was a lot of people stacked inside the door trying to get out. And so there was a lot of high-pitched sounds and a lot of people screaming, a lot of people crying. A lot of people like us who worked there were trying to be comforting. We're going to be okay. Don't push. Everybody's okay. We're okay. We're okay, everybody. Don't know. And that went on for maybe a full minute, maybe 2 minutes. It seemed like forever, but you know, it really was not very long. And in that hallway, I mean, for the first time in my life, I realized that fear had a sound. I mean, I always knew it had a, you know, a primal component and an emotional component, but it has a sound. It's almost, I don't think I can replicate it, but it's like an air stuck in the back of your throat, kind of a eking, it's hard to describe, and I'm a pretty good writer. I can't describe it, and I can't replicate the sound, which I guess is good.
Wow.
So that was my morning as we left the Capitol after the Pentagon attack, and as we exited the Capitol, we were looking, that was an exit that looked directly at our building, and behind the building, smoke was rising from the Pentagon, like behind our building, but it looked like it was behind our, and that was just bone-chilling moment. It was just a bone-chilling moment, and you don't know anything. You don't know what, why, who, what's going to happen, how much time you have to get away. It's all these things in your head, and we were both moving very fast. Mr. Ortiz was a runner, and I was, like, trying to keep up and not fall down and, you know, basic things, just focused, you know, entirely on surviving, I guess. And we got to our office, and why we went back into a building, why we went to our office, I don't think either one of us knows. I still don't know to this day why we did that. Well, we didn't have telephones. I guess that was the major reason.
Well, you know, where do you go? You know, you're saying, though, you don't know why you went to the office, but then, you know, in all this chaos and what's going on in your mind, it's like, where do you go?
We really couldn't think. I mean, it's
exactly
interesting. You just can't think, and I guess that's part shock, and I guess that's part, you know, survival instinct. You're not trying to think about everything. Think about one thing, you know. I've studied a lot about this, trying to figure it all out and convey it and relate what it means into things, to, you know, and that's kind of what the journals are about.
Uh-huh,
But in the midst of all that, you don't know any of that. We went back to our office. Mr. Ortiz wanted to make sure the staff left. He didn't want anybody waiting on him there. That was why he went back. I went back in with him because that's what you do.
Right,
went back
of course. The dedication and commitment. But then, you know, where do you go from there?
Well, I mean, I ran to my desk and unbolted my laptop, and as I was there, I grabbed my telephone and dialed my mother's phone number in Arkansas. And my mother, she doesn't say anything softly. She's a loud talker, and I think I have probably the same projection that she does. And she picked up the phone and said, "Kathy Ann, what's going on?" I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm in such big trouble. Mama's talking soft, and she used both my names." So that stuck in my head, and we literally left on the run and ran out the buildings onto the streets. And nobody ran out together from my office. I mean, I told people I'm leaving. Uh-huh. You want to come to my house, come to my house. A lot of people lived in Virginia. Others lived far away, you know, further away than walking distance. And I lived walking distance
uh-huh.
away.
Uh-huh.
And so we, you know, the guy that stayed with me was a colonel from the Pentagon who was a congressional fellow in our office that year. And he was great. As we were walking home back to my house, we heard explosions. And I didn't, you know, I'm a civilian. I'm a writer. What is that sound precisely? It's a boom. What is that sound? And so I grabbed Pete's arm and said, Pete, what is that? And he looked up and he said, I believe that's sonic booms, Kathy. I'm like, okay, we've joined the fight.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
The fight's joined. And I felt a little better at that point. I thought, even if there's probably going to be other planes going down and other people dying, but it may not be as close as I think it's going to be. We've joined the battle, at least over D.C., and so that was, and it was anything comforting I could find. You know?
Well,
what comfort is there? Okay, well, we're fighting back.
You know, and then you go to your home, but you're so close that did you really feel safe in your home, though?
I did and I didn't. I mean, it wasn't any place that was going to be safe.
Right.
But I felt safer.
Uh-huh.
And when I got home, I called my mother again to say, I'm at my house now. What are you doing? Are you okay? I don't want you to be worried about this because I'm fine.
Uh-huh.
And she was listening to a radio show that an old family friend of ours, is a great award-winning radio jock in Jonesboro, and I said, well, if Trey is interested, tell him to call me. I'd be happy to talk to him. And, you know, he's a reporter. Bang, he's on the phone.
Well, yeah.
Tell me what you're seeing. Tell me. First he said, are you safe? And I said, Trey, I don't know if any of us are safe today, but I feel safer than I felt so far today. And the second question he asked me was, tell me how you feel. And somebody told me this later because I didn't remember saying it, but I said, I feel like a scared rabbit hiding behind a rock.
Wow.
So all that was very almost out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
But talking to Trey was probably the most normal thing I could do because I was a press secretary and I was accustomed to talking to reporters about developing events. So that was something that was actually normal for me. Well, it wouldn't be normal for most people. It was actually normal for me. My mother was listening to that show, so she could hear my voice and know what was happening, at least at that moment in D.C., and all my friends and family that were, you know, probably pretty worried and couldn't get through could listen to my voice if they needed to, or at least hear from somebody else. Oh, yeah, I heard from Kathy. She was on the radio. So I had my own reasons, too, for doing that, but it did feel so normal. About 45 minutes later, I'm like, I need to get going, Trey. I need to, you know, find my boss and look up for reporters elsewhere.
So this is something that obviously is just so ingrained in your mind. I mean, that those of us that here I am in Texas, far away from where this happened, but it's like one of those things that you remember exactly where you were when you heard that, the first news, and of the trauma that happened. But I'm wondering, Kathy, have you replayed and replayed and replayed this in your mind over the years?
Replayed it like to remember it, or replayed it like to examine it, all that, yes.
All of it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, to remember, but just because it was such a traumatic experience, does it come to you and you just, like, close your eyes and you see this happening or hear? And, yeah.
No, not so much. I mean, there's the thing that will still take me back, and I'm not sure why for a minute. I mean, I'm literally... I feel like I'm something. There's something I've forgotten or something, and it's a beautiful, cloudless day.
Ah.
On a beautiful, cloudless day, sometimes, even today, I'm thinking, what is it? There's something. What, did I forget
mm-hmm.
something? Where my key? You know, I really don't know what it is, and I'm like, oh, pretty day. Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, God, for a pretty day.
Well, and that day on September 11th did start off as a pretty day, didn't it?
It was like a gorgeous temperate day.
Yeah.
You know, clouds in the sky, perfect temperature. It was one of those perfect autumn days. And I guess that I walked out in it in the morning. I walked home in it, you know, a few hours or so later. And I think I probably got back out one more time just to see if there were, you know, what kind of equipment I was hearing on the streets and that kind of thing.
So we're going to go to September the 12th, the day after. What was it like for you?
That was almost harder than the 11th.
I bet.
Actually, I mean, because at that point, you're kind of slowly walking back to the place you know is the most danger.
Uh-huh.
And for the first time, I saw the Capitol in my mind's eye with a crosshair on it, like a gun's crosshair on it. And the walking back in and walking back to the office and sitting back down and, you know, clearing your throat and trying not to cry and looking at the Capitol out the window and estimating the distance between my desk and the Capitol and, you know, and then hearing my intern go on and on and on about how the plane was going to, you know, the plane that crashed was going to be at the Capitol. And I let him go for a few minutes because, you know, we're all feeling like this. Let him get it out of his system. Well, 20 minutes later, I grabbed him by the ear and frog walked him out of the office and said, shut up. What do you think? We don't know.
Yeah.
Cool thing to do here is shut up. Or talk right, I don't have to hear you.
You're funny. What was the week after like?
It was everybody was angry, really. Everybody was vulnerable and angry. And by everybody, I don't mean people I worked with angry. I mean, we were all at levels like that, too. But, for instance, I think it was either the 12th or the 13th, one of our constituents had called and talked to our corpus office, and the corpus sent him up to me because he was mad. Oh, he's mad about something he saw on TV. So Mr. Ortiz said something about a briefing that, you know, I didn't learn anything I didn't learn on CNN, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody took umbrage at that, like, you know, the president, I mean, Mr. Ortiz should be something. I don't know, respect, I don't know what he wanted. But he was mad, and he wound up talking to me. Well, then this guy goes off and starts calling people on, you know, people in Congress, a bunch of cowards, and you guys that should have got you. I'm like, you know, I think we're done talking today, but thanks for calling. And I hung up because that was all I could think to say to this idiot. And then the guy in my corporate office called me back. Well, I was crying my eyes out. It was one of the few times I really broke down and cried. And Jerry called me, and he's like, Kelly, don't let that guy make you mad. I don't want you crying over that. I'm like, Jerry, I'm not crying over that. Let's just say the whole 3-day period, okay? Well, then a few minutes later, Mr. Ortiz comes running in back to me. Kelly, are you okay? Jerry, I'm like, Jerry talked to you, didn't he? Jerry called you, right? Well, I'm fine. That was like 5 minutes ago, and we're done. Bang. Okay, next thing.
Did you do a lot of crying?
I cried on 9/11. That morning late. And I cried that afternoon. My voice is breaking now. I cried that afternoon when I found a friend in New York that I hadn't been able to find. And then there were other times when, you know, I was thinking about it or something happened. A neighbor died that fall. Just so things just seemed sadder.
Sadder, of course.
But I cried about a lot of things. Yeah, I cried a lot of different times.
Mm-hmm.
And each time I let myself cry, I didn't try to stop. Because you got to figure at that point it's got to come out somewhere, so I let it come out crying.
Exactly.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Kathy Travis, former Capitol Hill staffer and author of Target City. As you've heard so far, she is recounting her experience of that day that we all remember, September 11th, 2001. But please stay tuned because there's so much more that we're going to be hearing from Kathy. Kathy, are you still in fear?
No. I'm more in cynicism now. I mean, I've lived through this for a long time, and I know that I know what the government's doing generally. I know what the security people are doing generally.
Uh-huh.
The thing that gives me greater hope than anything else, and this is the whole reason I wrote the book, we killed Bin Laden.
Yeah.
We finally whacked off the head of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll find another head, and they'll grow another way. And we probably got some, probably, I don't know, but I expect we got so much intelligence. We're whacking off a lot of heads, been whacking off a lot of heads since early May. And it was that event that made me want to write this book. I mean, I already had the journals. They were pretty extensive, and it had, you know, all the things I'd written, both notes to friends and just private stuff for the journal. And so I went back through and started combing that real quickly and spent about a week focused only on that and just bang, 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 churned it out. And then there was, you know, a couple edits and all that. But I wound up, this was selling on Kindle by Independence Day weekend. I mean, a project I hadn't even thought about until a couple of weeks after Bin Laden's death. That's how fast digital publishing, you know that already, but I mean, I'm still amazed by the speed of it.
It's, yeah. Well, our life is going pretty fast,
yeah,
too, isn't it? You know, it's
anyway,
everything is
yet.
Speeding up, and it's like, my goodness. The journals. These were all, your book has consisted of the personal journals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about this. You know, personal journals get to be very personal because they come from the heart. They come from your deepest thoughts. They come from that vulnerable place that you are when you are writing.
Yeah, a little psycho place even.
Oh, and psycho place, exactly. I mean, you know, they come from all different places. And so let's talk about your journals and how you actually were able to write them and what process you used when you were writing.
From the, we're talking about just the journals. We're not talking about the book Target.
That's right, the journals. Let's start with the journals. You know, the original, it wasn't even a thought about a book. It was just your process.
First of all, it was actually a psychology technique. I tend to be a pretty happy person, pretty positive person. Even in the middle of whatever's going on, I'll say, well, on the other hand, well, on the good side, like about, about September 13th, I said, oh, well, you know, a good thing, Gary Condit's not in the news.
Yeah.
But I really couldn't find my smile. I mean, that was kind of forced.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find my smile, and I liked having a smile, and I kind of depend on it. And I called a counselor over at the Human Resources to say, I'm sure I'm fine. I'm just saying I usually smile more than I'm smiling, crying a little bit more. What do you got for me? What do you got for me? And so I made an appointment with one of the counselors, and she said, you know what, use the strongest weapon you've got to fight this, Kathy. Write about it. And I've been a writer. I wrote for the congressman I worked for, so that was something also I did by rote. And I had already TikToked today just so I would remember, you know, this was first, this was second, this, you know, and trying to remember the time of things. So I kind of had that already. And so I said, I don't even want to think about it, much less write about it. And she said, that's the only way you really get through the angst.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe there's not a bridge or, you know, a fast boat or something I can get on. No, this is the best way to do it. And so I literally wrote a lot the first probably 3 or 4 months, like almost every day or every few days, certainly every week. And then it began to drop off a little bit more after that to the point where I was and I think that illustrates a couple of things. You know, it was easier to manage afterwards, or I had resigned myself to the, you know, futility of trying to, you know, outwit it or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And so what made you decide to put these journals into an actual book where people can read your experience and your thoughts and your chaos and your psychosis and everything else that went with it?
It's
pretty deep stuff.
It's deep stuff.
I know I journal, so it's like, you know.
Yeah, and I, you know, and I say in the book, either in the intro or at the end, I've taken out some of the more, you know, highly personal things,
sure,
or things that would be embarrassing to somebody else,
mm-hmm,
or even names that, even if I was telling an event I thought might come back to embarrass somebody, I just, you know, changed it to a friend or a colleague,
mm-hmm,
or a policeman, whatever, so that nobody specifically would be embarrassed by that. But yeah, the journals were incredibly as I was reading back through, part of the dynamic I was having as I was preparing this for publication was, do I really want people knowing I'm this, you know, nuts? As I finished it, I thought, okay, in the end, I wasn't that nuts, you know, or it kept me from being nuts, or, you know, I was a lot more nuts and became less nuts, but maybe nuts isn't exactly the right thing, but I got a little less crazy about it as time went on, and the times that I would get crazy about it again would be when there was other events, whenever there was, you know, a sudden an evacuation of our buildings, or, you know, the the policeman saying, you know, this is the Capitol Police. Get your member out of the building. We've got a plane coming in. This is the Capitol Police. But that does to you, I can't explain. It's just, you know, you run, you drop, you run stuff. On 9/11, I forgot my intern. I was the intern coordinator, which is why I frog-walked the kid out on the 12th to say, you know, shut up. But I forgot him that day. And I felt bad about that. So afterwards, then I felt like the interns weren't just my responsibility, you know, how they do in the office. It was my responsibility to get their butts out with me whenever we evacuated. And so that was how that always worked. The first couple of times, one time we were three or four kids in the front office. Most were my interns. One was a visitor. And they said, you know, well, where do we go? I'm like, stay with me. Don't lose me. Stay with me. So I go taking off down the hall. Every time I turned around to make sure they were behind me, bang, they ran into me.
Oh.
And other people who read the book have said, you know, I remember that day, or this brought it back to me, like, you know, suddenly my heart's beating fast, I'm sweating. And
yeah.
One of the kids I ran out with, I told her name was in the book, and she said, oh, I hope you said something nice. So I sent her the section, and she said, oh, my God, Kathy, I remember that day. I've never had to evacuate the building before, and I knew you'd been through it, so I wasn't about to lose you, and, you know, the whole thing. So
what compelled you to actually write this book and put it together and, you know, have – what is your motive?
I'm sorry, you asked me that a minute ago, and I don't think I answered that. I mean, the impetus for it was I thought the story had a good ending, finally.
Mm-hmm.
When we killed bin Laden, I thought that we exacted a measure of revenge, vengeance, justice, whatever, that had been so sort of the salve we needed for the national wound, I thought. And the 10th anniversary was coming up, and I'd been thinking about that anyway, and sort of sad about the 10th anniversary coming and where we were in the world. But I thought the world position had improved a little bit anyway before the 10th anniversary was going to be here. And then when we killed bin Laden, I thought, oh, God. I cried that night. I cried very hard that night.
Uh-huh.
It's like I couldn't think of anything else but all the faces.
Was it a release for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can well imagine. I can well imagine because you were so involved in it, and there you were. And when he was killed, I can just imagine how you felt. It was that probably some pent-up anger and all the rest of the stuff that really hadn't been addressed yet, which just you were able to let it go.
It was all that.
Yeah.
It was all that.
Yeah. So what have you been doing? I know that you're not working there anymore.
I live on Capitol Hill, but I don't work on the Hill anymore. So.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been writing books on the Hill. I've been traveling. I've even written a book about the country of Azerbaijan, a little country between Iran and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was awfully interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I was an election observer for their elections a couple of times. I've been doing things that I wanted to do and picking projects I want to work on and running my own time and making my own deadlines, and that's delightful.
Are you happy?
Incredibly. I mean, I love working on the Hill, but it was like, I tell people so many times, it's like a splendid prison. It really is. And the day I walked out, I felt like I was walking on air. Not that I was walking away from the target or I was walking away from danger, but I was walking away from a 20-hour workday that was just brutal and never ended. So that was what I was walking away from, not so much as the target as it was, but you know, it was also that.
Your book is titled Target Sitting. Why did you choose that title?
Well, I had, over the years, heard once or twice the Capitol called the target, but not so much a target like for bad guys, but a pseudonym for location or something, you know. Where are we going? We're going to the target. I just heard it. I didn't really pick it up. I just heard it a couple of times. But then on 9/11, after 9/11, I should say, anything from an aerial view, it looked like it had a big old bullseye on it. Because if you've ever flown into Washington or if you've ever seen the Capitol from the air, I mean, it's a huge white thing on a sea of green.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't miss that.
It's a target.
And yeah. I used to call going to work target sitting. So that was why, because I was coming up with a name for the book, I couldn't quite figure out what I was going to name it. And, and then I just saw the words. There were so many times I said the word target sitting in the journals. I'm like, oh, wait. So two-word title, that's simple. I like that. It's concise. I like that.
Do you miss working on the Capitol Hill?
I miss talking to the people. I mean, I see members, I see colleagues, former colleagues, and they say, you know, I didn't think you would leave. I never thought you'd leave because you were so good at it. Yeah. And every time they said that to me when I worked on the Hill, I'm like, oh, watch. Oh, watch me.
Yeah.
And the week that I left, our chief of staff came back in the back office and said, now, this is Kathy's last week that there's going to be legislation. Last week Congress is sitting, and this might be a little emotional for her. And everybody started laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, this is the same Kathy who's whistling and skipping down the hall right now? I don't think she's going to be emotional.
Do you go back and visit?
A lot.
Do you?
A lot. I'll meet my friends on the Hill for lunch or
mm-hmm.
supper, and I stay in touch. We're all over Facebook and email, keeping up, and when I've talked to the members, they've all said, you know, I miss you. You know, you were funny and made me laugh. And everybody's all serious now. So I mean, I've got a pretty deep bench of friends still on the Hill, both elected and unelected, and other friends around the Hill who, you know, have been retired or whatever. So I love my life and I love where I am. I mean, I still love Capitol Hill. I'm just glad I'm glad I'm five blocks away from where the actual target is.
Close, but far enough to be not the target.
Yeah.
Gosh, Kathy, this has been just so interesting, and I know that our listeners are, I'm sure they're just like sitting there and it's reflecting back to that day when they first heard.
I've gotten a lot of that, if you don't understand.
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot of that from people who have read it and said, all I could think about was, you know, the things I went through. And
mm-hmm.
both of my editors were here in D.C. One was reading it just for content. Is this really a good book? And the other was reading it for language mechanics. And both, when they finished, sat down and cried.
Yeah.
And then the second one, the mechanics editor said, the test of whether or not you nailed this, and you nailed it, but the test of that is going to be, when somebody who either doesn't know you or wasn't here on 9/11 judges it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she's probably right about that. And it brings up everybody's personal memories and
remember
who they were. And
definitely.
And it's a certain chilling thing. I don't know.
Yeah, and, you know, we sat. We sat at the TV for days.
Right.
Days, hours on end. And I remember at that time I had that day a bunch of clients that I had appointments that were coming to see me, and all of them canceled.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, but we were in Texas. You know, we're not right there, but it just, we were so emotionally attached to what was happening. And later that evening, I got a call from a friend of mine that used to live here, and he was working down near the Twin Towers, several buildings over, and he phoned to tell me that he's fine. He at the time that the first plane hit, he just came out of the subway and saw it, and he just turned around and started running. And by evening, he did make it back to, he was living in Connecticut, and it's like, you know, and we were starting to get phone calls, and we were all, the whole country, the whole world was just emotionally attached.
Yeah. People were attached to people here. I mean, even if
mm-hmm.
you didn't have a family member or a friend in Washington or New York, you had a friend who had a family member or a friend.
Right, right.
And one of the things that I said at the beginning of the journals was, you know, who in the world would have thought the country would have been so protective of Washington and New York?
Well, you know, when you consider that, you know, we know somebody, it says back to the sixth degree of separation.
Right.
You know, we're attached somehow or another. One more thing, Kathy. There seems to me a lot of buzz that some of the people that had actually experienced or maybe had family, there's a lot of PTSD as a result from this. And you know, it just...
You think I have it?
No.
I
got diagnosing.
I got asked that a lot.
Do you?
That's why I was just asking you, yeah. I've got, and people ask me after they read the journals. And I said, you know what, at the time I wrote that, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. And probably the thing that keeps me grounded today is having done the journals.
And that's exactly what I was thinking when you were talking about the journals, and I was thinking, of course, this is one way. And what I, you know, the psychologist that you talk to or a therapist, I'm all for journaling. I think that that is some way, a way to really get to the core of what our issue is
mm-hmm.
and let it out. And obviously it worked for you.
It did work for me. And being in politics, I thought it was generally a bad idea to keep a journal. Because those things could get subpoenaed. That was always
right.
I never kept a journal. I didn't need to. I didn't think I needed to. I had a pretty good trove of, you know, files people look through anyway. But it really never occurred to me to keep a daily journal. After 9/11, I didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, I still don't really know how writing it all down helps, but it does.
It does.
It does. and that really got me through the first, probably the first year was when I was the most vulnerable.
Yeah, I can
maybe know. 6 months, but
I believe that. Thanks, Kathy. This has been so informative, and I know that the listeners are, as I mentioned earlier, you know, sitting there and reflecting back to where were they on September 11th in 2001. And there you go, listeners. Target Sitting is the name of Kathy Travis's book. It is available on Kindle, and do check out her website. Kathy, tell our listeners what your website address is.
It is travisbooks.com.
How easy is that? Travisbooks.com. And believe it or not, she's got more than one book on there, so do check out her website. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Listeners, this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.